This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Saturday, June the 15th, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of June 2014. This week our editors are Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. This week, your readers are Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
Albie Minns.
Hello.
And reading for Nikki Baring this week, Ellen Gray.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Maria Head. And we'll start as usual with the main headlines, which this week are GP is found negligent, dementia patients evacuated from home, and city the place for a stress-free commute. So can we start with you, please, Ellen?
GP is found negligent. Big payout for patient left blind by wrong diagnosis. A Winchester artist who was struck blind after a GP failed to diagnose meningitis has won her legal battle for compensation. The High Court last week upheld Julie Coakley's claim for negligence against a family doctor who failed to spot telltale signs of the bug. The amount of damages has been agreed but not revealed. Her claim had earlier been valued at over £1 million. The court heard that Mrs. Coakley, aged 48, visited the Grattan Surgery in Sutton Scotney in January 2008 with classic signs of meningitis. But Dr. Henrietta Rosie diagnosed a respiratory tract infection and prescribed bed rest and plenty of fluids. Judge Stephen Oliver Jones, QC, told the hearing, Dr. Rosie failed to observe and examine the rashes thoroughly, or more than superficially. She failed to examine Mrs. Coakley properly, and in particular failed to examine her neck for stiffness and to heed her query about meningitis. Dr. Rosie failed to suspect, diagnose, or exclude, and consequently failed to treat Mrs. Coakley for bacterial meningitis when she should have done, and when a reasonably competent GP would have done so. He concluded, these findings lead to the regrettable but inevitable conclusion that Dr. Rosie was negligent, and thus in breach of the duty of care she owed to Mrs. Coakley as her patient. Mrs. Coakley from South Wanston was on the verge of establishing herself as a glass designer when she was struck down by bacterial meningitis in January 2008. Within hours of Dr. Rosie sending her home untreated, she collapsed and spent several days in a coma. Family members at her hospital bedside were warned to expect the worst. Mrs. Coakley, who was in her final year of a three-dimensional design course at the University of Creative Arts, finally came round, but was left totally blind and partially deaf. She was also stricken by balance problems and facial palsy. She gained a first-class degree and works as an artist. Speaking after the verdict, Mrs. Coakley said, "This has been an extremely long and hard-fought battle, and I am pleased that the legal proceedings have been successfully concluded. I would like to thank my legal team at Moore Blatch and the unwavering support of QC Susan Wadway and Junior Counsel William Latimer Sayer. It was a difficult decision to pursue proceedings, but I believe there were key lessons to be learnt from this case. I hope it highlights the importance of an early and accurate diagnosis of meningitis and the significant difference this can make to someone's life when this fails to occur." Dr. Rosie, in a statement, said, "I am glad that the case has now reached a conclusion and wish Mrs. Coakley and her family the best for the future." Dr. Rosie left the Grattan Surgery several years ago. She joined in 1985 and from 1991 was a part-time partner. The Grattan declined to comment.
Dementia patients evacuated from home. 36 residents at Colton Care's St Catherine View Dementia Care Home in Winchester had to be temporarily relocated to other homes in the group following a flooding incident. Emergency management procedures were immediately put into action last Sunday evening as a result of flood damage caused by the failure of the mains water supply to a tank in the roof of the Stanmore Lane building. Colton Care's Chief Executive, Mark Atchison, joined responders from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service in praising what was an all-round team effort to manage the evacuation as smoothly as possible. Mr. Atchison said, "I'm really proud of all our team members, led by Home Manager Anne-Marie Med, for the calm, professional way in which they managed the relocation of residents whose rooms were affected. The first priority throughout has been the safety and well-being of residents. Everyone involved, including carers and minibus drivers, put in a fantastic effort. All affected residents were moved within a matter of a few hours and were well looked after. We ensured that anyone being moved was safe, warm, hydrated, and had their medication and nutritional needs met. Experienced professional nurses, carers, and other staff who are well known to all the residents have been with them throughout the relocation process and will continue to provide care during this time. Most of the residents being moved went to Colton Care's newly opened dementia care home in Lymington, Linden House. Two went to the group's other Winchester home, Abbots Barton in Worthy Road. Others were relocated to homes run by the group in Poole and West Moors. Following the move, staff at St Catherine's View made sure that residents were reunited with any personal belongings that they were not able to take with them straight away. All relatives were contacted and knew where their loved ones had been taken so they could visit and, if they wished, look after residents' possessions in the meantime. 20 residents, whose homes were unaffected by the flooding damage, remained at St Catherine's View. Mr Atchison added, "From the outset of the incident, we have liaised closely with external agencies such as the Fire Service, Health and Social Care Bodies, and our regulator, the Care Quality Commission. All are aware of our response to the situation and are happy with what we are doing."
City the place for stress-free commute. Journey Tracking Survey claims it's amongst easiest. Winchester has been named as one of the most stress-free cities for commuting motorists. In a survey that tracked people's journeys across 49 cities, it was revealed that commuters travel at 19.99 miles per hour, whilst neighbouring Southampton was exposed as one of the 10 most gridlocked, with traffic there moving just 2 miles per hour quicker than in the heart of London at an average of 12.64 miles per hour. Thursdays are the worst days to travel in Southampton, while Fridays are judged to be the worst in Winchester. The figures were measured by insurance firm Direct Line and drew on 3 billion speed and location observations in 20 million miles of data logged by motorists between April 2012 and December last year. Professor Chris Turner, Chief Executive of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said he is pleased about the results. "I think people worry far too much about coming into the city," he said. "I think with the new 20-mile-per-hour speed limit and the road traffic plan, although there may be some small problems, the reality is that for a very vibrant and modern city, it is actually much easier to get into the middle of this city than many others. People will think the city they commute in is appalling, but in comparison to others, Winchester is actually a very pleasant place to drive." However, Chris Holloway, Director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, thinks the survey should have also focused on other aspects of travel in the city. "I think they are missing the point," she said. I don't drive, so I don't know about that. But the point is how stressful it is to walk, cycle, or get to work by other means. And there's the photograph with the heading, In a Jam, Rush Hour in St. George's Street, Winchester, which shows a traffic jam.
Thank you, everyone. And following the headlines, we have death notices, and then Ellen will read Christian comment for us. The death notices begin with Arnold, Pamela Mary Arnold, on the 6th of June at the Royal County Hospital. Dixon, Linda Dixon, on the 26th of May, aged 59. Dominey, Christopher William Dominey, known as Mick, on the 9th of June in his 93rd year. Edridge, Robert Edridge, OBE, on the 3rd of June, aged 75. Green, Molly Green, on the 2nd of June in her 109th year. Holmes, Barbara Eileen Holmes, on the 9th of June, aged 93. Lovick, Winifred Mary Lovick, on the 3rd of June, aged 94. Newton, Adela Newton, on the 2nd of June, aged 80. Sim, Betty Sim, on the 8th of June, aged 74. Watt, Elizabeth Watt, known as Betty, on the 1st of June, aged 90. Wiseman, Edith May Wiseman, on the 8th of June, aged 86. And now, on to Christian comment, please, Ellen.
Be like Barnabas and recognise the good in others, writes Terry E. Hemming. I wonder who you remember from your childhood and your school days. Was it the most gifted person? The person who was a hero because he or she was always the winner? I often read of people talking about the teacher they recall, and almost always there is a sentence in it saying that he or she encouraged them to see that they were good at this or that. Surely one of the marks of a great teacher is not to instill fear, but to encourage. And if that is true in schools, it is true in other leadership also. The manager who encourages his team in the workplace, the sports captain or coach who encourages the players to achieve their best, the parent who encourages his or her child to do what they can see they have potential to do. This week we have celebrated a saint known for this, Saint Barnabas. Barnabas was not his real name, it was Joseph, but his nickname was Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. In the Middle Eastern languages, son of means that the person, well, this was the characteristic of the person. The great encourager, we might say. I like him, because he was a person who could always see the best in people and rejoiced in it instead of being resentful. When Saul was converted to Paul, many were suspicious and frightened of him for his past persecution of Christians. But Barnabas took him under his wing. When people from a different ethnic group and religious background became Christians, then the first Christians sent him to investigate. When he saw what was happening, it is said he was glad. I like that. Not suspicious, not wary in case they replaced him, but glad because of the good things he saw in them. That continued when he was preaching, for Paul joined him and it appeared that Barnabas was the first speaker, but gradually Paul became first. And today far more people are aware of Paul rather than Barnabas. Paul would not have been able to take that position if Barnabas had not encouraged him and helped him. Yet he did not strive to keep Paul second to him, but allowed him to develop. Perhaps today in our celebrity-driven society, we want to be in front, receiving the applause and being recognised for the heroes we think we are. There's a lot to be said for the encouragers, who, like Barnabas, see good things in others and are glad. Perhaps we could all look around this week and see who we might encourage to develop their full potential.
Thank you for that, Ellen. And we have 10 letters to the editor today, and Graham has the first of these.
Yeah, thank you. It's from Caroline Dennis of Worthy Lane, Winchester, headed Make Cattle Market Gateway Car Park. Sir Keith Wood told the Chronicle, May the 8th, there's an urgency about this. So could this explain why Winchester City Council and councillors have not had time to inform and consult residents and small businesses, and more importantly, not to consider them worthy of the status of stakeholders? Some were informed of the proposals by a leaflet 3 days before a drop-in at the Discovery Centre in February, and were thus presented with what amounted to a fait accompli. Many locals did not receive that, or any other leaflet. Winchester Chamber of Commerce and WINAC both recommended keeping the cattle market as a gateway car park. If it is built on, where will those cars park? To get to the proposed multi-storey in Gladstone Street, they must cross the busy City Road interchange. This is not a viable proposition for residents, businesses or their clients. The City Council proposes parking at River Park and have increased parking at Silver Hill. This, together with a dramatic increase from Barton Farm, will make circulation even more congested and increase pollution. The station approach is very pleasant as it is. The Register Office is a building of character, and any new structures would dwarf one of Winchester's few outstanding modern buildings, Hampshire County Record Office. The cattle market is the site of the Roman Cemetery, its eastern side marking the conservation area and boundary of Hyde, whose historical significance is now widely recognised. So why is the City Council so set on recreating Basingstoke and kowtowing to the demands of big business at financial and environmental cost to the locals? Caroline Dennis, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Now a letter from PJ House of Eastleigh. EU referendum is compromised. Sir, the British public have been sleepwalking into an EU-led dictatorship endorsed by our Labour, Tory and now Lib Dem politicians for over 40 years, who have repeatedly signed away our supremacy and constitution. If one uses an example of the parliamentary elections recently, UKIP, with a resounding win, received no funds from the EU, whereas the other main parties did, to endorse their doctrine. A picture is now forming, I feel. Propaganda still exists and has been used throughout history. Just consider what occurred during the war years and beyond. The subject of a referendum on an in-out choice of the EU has been compromised. The Prime Minister has promised an EU relationship reform. That is to say, repealing some of our laws, etc. Angela Merkel, an EU stalwart, says this is virtually impossible, as we need the signed consent of every member state. I, for one, cannot see this occurring. I do not trust any of the establishment and continue the fight with UKIP.
Al Jazeera paints a different picture, writes Danny Hable. Sir, Al Jazeera has exposed the extreme anti-Israel bias of a film shown in Winchester by one of your correspondents. It became another stop on the world tour of a film, The Stones Cry Out, when a contributor to your Christian Comment column, Mary Gray, arranged a screening at St Peter's Church in Jury Street in April. The film was about how hard life is for Christians in the Galilee in northern Israel. An emotional presentation, it made numerous accusations of corruption and aggressive actions by the Jewish state before and since it was declared by the United Nations. Its director, Jasmine Perny, an Italian-Egyptian, focused closely on Jish, a village near the border with Lebanon. Residents recalled how cruel the Israelis had been during the war of 1948, and how life in Jish was hardly bearable due to the way the authorities suppressed the Christians. I take an interest in the news about Israel, and in my search for an objective view, go to varied sources. One is Al Jazeera, the Arab news broadcaster. I was interested in how it saw the recent visit of the Pope to the Middle East. One of the people with the pontiff was Patriarch Bishara al-Rai, leader of the Maronite Church, a Christian movement started in Lebanon in the 4th century CE. Jish, selected by Ms. Perny as an example of the intolerable life for Christians in Israel, is mainly Maronite. Many residents come from the Lebanon and sought sanctuary in Israel when the Israeli army left southern Lebanon in 2000. Many consider themselves Aramaic, not Arab, and are strong supporters of Israel. The Israeli government gives financial support for the people to learn Aramaic. There seems no relationship between the people from Jish in the film and the news I read on Al Jazeera, which gives a different picture of an expanding village. Danny Habel, Bear Close, Winchester.
Amanda Turner writes from Honeysuckle Close, Winchester, and maintains that campaigners can hold heads high. Sir, the decade-long Save Bushfield campaign owes a big thank you to Barbara Guthrie and all the other supporters for putting extensive effort, teamwork and community spirit into protecting this precious part of Winchester's surrounds. Apart from its natural beauty and contribution to the landscape, Bushfield provides exercise opportunities for people from all around. When the British Heart Foundation is recommending regular exercise, it's worth considering the millions, billions of football fans from those who have enjoyed it. Oh, footfalls, not footballs. What am I talking about? Millions, oh no, billions of footfalls from those who have enjoyed it over many years. Bushfield also links with the newly furbished Hockley Viaduct, further supporting the drive to promote exercise for health. And its blackberry bushes provide delicious, nutritious berries to help achieve and surpass the recommended 5-a-day servings of fruit vegetables. My heart bleeds that this public health facility may be no longer available for dog walking, clean air, tobogganing, berry picking, sensible sun exposure to top up vitamin D we don't get during the winter, nor working all day in schools, shops, offices, cars, etc. Campaigners can hold their heads high, even though hearts may be bruised by legal decisions. The hope is that the Save Bushfield campaign and Bushfield users have made such an impression on the public health agenda, and that a continued facility can be negotiated with the church commissioners in the name of investing in good health and the common good. Amanda Turner, Honeysuckle Close, Winchester.
And now a letter under the heading Revving Up Fears Over Fast Bikers. Sir, on reading your front page article and editorial about speeding motorcycles on the A272 last week, my first reaction was, at last, followed by, why has it taken so long? On the Sunday following your article, I witnessed the rarest piece of wildlife in Hampshire. Two traffic officers pointing a speed gun at motorcycles. Please believe me that in 10 years living near the A272 junction, known locally as the West Meon Hut, I have never seen this happen before. Camera vans trying to catch cars, breaking the 30 mph limit in West Meon and Bramdene, are common. But enforcement of the limit on motorcycles on the 60 and 50 mph roads just does not happen. I have complained to several chief constables about speeding, noise, and general bad riding, the latter leading to fatalities locally, which one Hampshire constabulary officer called own goals. I leave others to comment on that attitude to human life. I've been spun all sorts of excuses by Hampshire constabulary. We think education is the answer, or we can't prove that an exhaust is illegal. The former clearly has not worked, and the latter is just plain untrue. By allowing motorcycles to choose which laws they will obey, Hampshire Constabulary has put the rest of the traffic laws in jeopardy, leading to the dreadful situation that we have today. Locals are just asking for the law to be enforced. If we see more motorcyclists in court for illegal silencers, it might dawn on the rest that speeding and dangerous driving are also illegal. Terry Muldoon, Woodlands, West Meon.
Bill Hode writes, "This indifference is nothing new. Sir, I have for some time been engaged in researching Hyde Abbey, and with the recent spate of development proposals by the City Council, I was amused to find the following piece of text from a work first published in 1866. Winchester, as everybody knows, is to the antiquary one of the most deeply interesting places in England, and it is surely of all places that in which the most barbarous indifference to antiquity has been persistently displayed by the municipal and magisterial authorities." Well, further comment seems unnecessary, other than that history in this instant is not repeating itself, but merely allowing us to see that the inexorable process of development and redevelopment has been going on since at least 1866, and that the excerpt above could easily have been written yesterday. Perhaps in 2066 there'll be no need to write about Old Winchester, as it will not exist. Bill Hode, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Sally Walden of Wright's Close, South Wanston, says, "Forget details, just get off our backs. So during the recent elections, I had more Lib Dem paper through my letterbox than from all the other parties combined. And for me, it was a fence-sitting exercise. Our Lib Dem candidate never said she does not want reform of the EU, but then nor did she say what reforms she might want. And I hear very little from my Lib Dem MEP, Catherine Bearder, certainly nothing to justify the £300,000 or so her salary, office and expenses cost us. There are, after all, two EUs, one being our European heritage and community, and the other the undemocratic political structure that has been implemented. It is the latter that must change. Perhaps the unbalanced judgments of the European Court have summed up what is wrong and done more harm to the EU ideal than any other single issue. Then there is immigration, or more accurately, population. Can we go on concreting over the South with attendant demands for more reservoirs, roads, railways and services, simply because people decide to turn up, justified on benefiting the economy? It is so much more fun for a politician to play with taxes from 100 million people rather than from 50 million, and rather less fun for constituents whose wealth is static and quality of life reducing. The idea that this can change from just polite conversations is delusional. To quote President Roosevelt, speak softly and carry a big stick. And UKIP is our potential stick. Despite the political upheaval across Europe, party activists still don't get it. Forget policy details and just get off our backs." Sally Walden, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Keith Story writes from St Cross Road, Winchester. "Green energy must not mar countryside." And his letter appears under a photograph of countryside, of land near Bullington Cross, which could become a wind farm. "Sir, at a recent meeting addressing measures to reduce climate change, one contributor spoke forcefully about the desirability of installing wind turbines at Bullington Cross. He stressed that Winchester had a large carbon footprint, like most prosperous areas, and that we should reduce dependence on imported energy by generating more green energy ourselves. He said it wasn't fair to outsource our energy needs, and we should locally generate our fair share. I think we were meant to feel guilty about importing energy. But energy production isn't the only thing. We also outsource production of almost everything used to build or furnish homes and businesses, including bricks, tiles, glass, girders, desks, chairs, sofas, TVs, computers, etc. We also outsource extravagances such as buses, bicycles, mobile phones and Scotch whisky. Curiously, I don't feel guilty about outsourcing production of most things I use. In fact, I feel pleased knowing some things I buy support people working in less prosperous parts of the country, which is why I try to buy British-produced items. While supporting the principle of generating green energy and reducing reliance on fossil fuels, it should not be at the cost of ruining our landscapes, or at the cost of our health, which is undermined by visual intrusions and noise. Nor should wind turbines or solar farms take land needed for crops, because crop production for food or energy is a vital part of our national security. Hampshire is good at crops, including trees, which have great potential as a source of energy without spoiling our countryside. Our coastline also has the potential for generating tidal and wave power. Winchester City Council may well decide to allow giant wind turbines at Bullingdon Cross. I hope they decide against. Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Traffic moves when the lights go down, writes John Dennison. Sir, in reply to Mr Bright's letter in the Chronicle of May 29th, I do feel he has stated something that most of us who regularly drive through Winchester have realised for some time. When the traffic lights stop working, traffic moves. I'm sure the traffic management people know this very well, so why do they persist with traffic lights that make an excellent job of hindering flow and which in turn cause high air pollution, 3 times the legal limit in the St George's Street area? Is it because they are wed to a particular theory of traffic management? It seems to consist by regulating the flow by whatever means possible. Examples include, but are not limited to, the pedestrian islands along Worthy Lane, which cause the traffic to stop when buses are picking passengers up, the widening of Stockbridge Road pavement above Roebuck Inn, the poor enforcement of unloading and load of trucks in peak time. There are alternatives which work, that involve taking away all traffic lights, signs, and calling it a shared space. But it would require a different attitude from drivers, and some feel that since they've paid GVED, the graduated vehicle excess duty, they own the road, and walkers, horse riders, and cyclists had just better get out of their way. If we live with the status quo, air pollution levels will rise. How many people suffering from asthma or any breathing difficulty avoid the city centre when the pollution levels are high? John Dennison, Thurmond Crescent, Winchester.
More politics, I'm afraid. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester, says the Lib Dem schism is self-inflicted. Sir, I was shocked to see Winchester Lib Dems, Jackie Porter, Martin Todd, Lucille Thompson, disloyal Lib Dems attacked by MP in the Chronicle, May the 29th, involved in the recent attempt to oust Nick Clegg. What a pity they didn't go public with their doubts about the leadership during the election campaign. I assume they did not want to alienate Lib Dem voters loyal to the leader. Although I resigned from the party nearly 4 years ago, I was still urged not to stand as an independent in the local election, in case I split the Lib Dem vote. It is ironic, therefore, that the present schism has been caused by the party's own members. As these dissidents do not see Mr Clegg as a vote winner, I assume we'll not be seeing him or any other big guns descend on Winchester for photo ops in the run-up to next year's general election. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
Thank you, everyone, for those. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And there is only one historical item this week, which concerns a 150-year-old urn.
And it comes under the heading, Returning Urn to Its Former Glory, from the files of Embley Park near Romsey. An urn dating back to the time when Embley Park near Romsey belonged to the family of Florence Nightingale has been painstakingly restored to its former glory. The work is part of the Hampshire Collegiate School's landscape management plan. The urn, which is shown in the photograph attached to this article, shows a photograph of Florence Nightingale sitting, reading on a wall in a garden beside the urn at Embley Park. It's a Victorian version of the 1st century BC Borghese vase, probably made by Austin and Seeley or Pullum Stone in the mid-19th century. In Florence's time, a number of these adorned the terrace wall. The one in the photograph is the only remaining one of this pattern at Embley. Frost damage over 150 years, coupled with poor repairs, had left it in a sorry state. Chilstone, a company based in Sussex, who specialised in restoration work, came to the rescue. Their craftsman, John Hallett, carefully rebuilt the vase to enable a strong mould to be built from it. Chilstone were then able to reproduce it and have supplied 12 replica urns to Hampshire Collegiate School, which have been positioned along the terrace wall in the school grounds. And there's a second photograph of John Hallett and one of his colleagues at Embley Park with a replica of the vase, which looks pristine, perfect in every way.
And your say this week is read by Ellen.
Your say, we asked in light of plans to treble fines in magistrates' courts. Is it fair to fine drivers up to £10,000 for speeding? Harvey Ross, aged 85, retired of the barracks in Brandsbury, said no. It seems rather excessive to me. It should be left to the larger courts, I think. Caroline Egan, aged 32, a surveyor of Owens Road, Full Flood, said, it would be okay in most extreme cases, but not if you were going 2 miles above the limit. However, it would be reasonable if someone was driving incredibly dangerously. Amy Nichols, aged 32, a market researcher of Gillingham Close Kingsworthy, said, I think it's a good deterrent for people who speed, but I also feel that £10,000 is a lot of money for an individual to pay. And Stephen White, aged 30, a commissioner of Blackthorn Close South Wanston, said, well, it would certainly make people think twice before speeding. But for someone on minimum wage, it would be draconian compared to someone on £10 million a year.
And can we have Chronicle comment, please, Graham?
Yes, indeed. It's headed, Hats Off to Theatre's Gang of Six. It seems inconceivable to think that a city like Winchester, with its rich history, architecture and culture, would not have its very own theatre. But 40 years ago, the venue was on the brink of being sold off to a supermarket. Had it not been for the vision and determination of a bunch of campaigners, affectionately known as the Gang of Six, a generation of theatre-goers would have missed out. The theatre puts on up to 200 performances a year and welcomes over 70,000 visitors, helping the local economy too. Additionally, more than 300 young people from around the area each week take part in workshops, youth theatre and dance. It also now has the responsibility for organising the city's famous Hat Fair, itself celebrating 40 years. So, in its centenary year, it's hats off to those six. Here's to the next 100 years of the Theatre Royal. And a little note, headed Winchester. Winchester has been named as one of the most stress-free cities for commuting motorists. We heard a little about it earlier on. It may not be the worst by any means, but try telling that to the thousands of drivers who negotiate the city's one-way system during peak time.
And now can we have first person, and that will be followed by Bel Garum, an alternative look at the news.
Ronald Allison writes, there's now an extra parking space in Hyde. So, Southampton, the football club that is, finished in eighth place in the Premier League. Well done, Southampton. Well done. The city itself this time also had a top 10 finish. But not, however, the cause of wild celebrations. Our sister paper, the Daily Echo, quoted statistics compiled by insurance company Direct Line and told us that recently the city had been named and shamed as having the 10th slowest traffic movement out of 49 cities studied. The research showed that the average speed in Southampton during rush hour was 12.64 miles an hour, and that's only 2 miles an hour faster than in central London. Now, by contrast, Winchester was reported to be one of the more stress-free places in which to travel to work by car, with motorists getting around at 19.99 miles an hour. Now, despite having driven a great deal in both cities, and in pre-motorway days through Chandler's Ford going from one to the other, I have no way of knowing how accurate the figures are. I can only truthfully report much frustration in both places, but not really more than around the country generally. However, I feel I must now declare an interest, or maybe a lack of interest. A life-changing day occurred a couple of weeks ago. The DVLA informed me that my eyesight was no longer good enough for my driving licence to be renewed. Lack of field vision was cited, and in my own now limited view, that was fair enough. I knew when I was taking the field vision test that I was not going to make it, and in fact, I'd already stopped driving a few weeks earlier. So, after some 60 years, I take the wheel no more. I had first done so, off track, as we would now say, with my father in his old Standard 8, sometime before the war, and somewhere on Moreton Heath in Dorset. The next time was in Germany during national service. It was in one of the Volkswagen Beetles the British Army was using, and this time my track was the parade ground at our barracks near Dusseldorf. It's an odd feeling, not being allowed to drive. But I'm no Jeremy Clarkson petrol head. There was no sentimental attachment to the car as it was driven off after its sale, though I did think back to its many predecessors over the years. My main thoughts, though, were that Winchester is a great place in which to live, not because you can average 20 miles an hour in the rush hour, but because just about everywhere is an easy walking distance. And there are always friends with cars and, of course, public transport. I also did the maths. Not too bad. Less convenience, true. Fewer outgoings? Well, I think so. And there is now one more parking space available in Hyde.
Bel Garum's four items from Bel Garum this week. The first one is under the heading Rooftop Residents Will Look Down on Proud Creators. After a decade of wrangling, the Silver Hill development is finally set to come to a skyline near you soon. So Bel Garum was riveted to be reminded of how the new homes and shops will look in relation to the existing high street. Now, The article shows then a sketch of the new Skyline, Silver Hill development of seven and eight story properties, all in a terraced aspect. And underneath it shows the terrace aspect of the Victorian and Georgian properties that are there at the moment. Everyone had a squint at that sketch. It was either that or wash up the coffee cups. But the Chronicle newsroom was deeply divided. "It's fresh and stunning," said one. "Looks like Winchester grads," sniffed another. Certainly the Georgian and Victorian edifices looked diddy next to architect Allies and Morrison's bold 21st century vision. There's also no denying the views from the planned seventh floor apartments over the city and its Norman cathedral will be stunning, even if they will come with a significant price tag. But can it be right that these lofty residents will also end up looking down on the Guildhall and Winchester City Council, Silver Hill's proud creators? Belgarum suddenly frowned. Surely there must be some error. They'll not only see which councillors and officers have bald patches, but they'll know who sunbathes on the roof at lunchtime during summer. Now, the second item is Jane's bidding to conquer the Coals of Corsica. Winchester Marathon cyclist Jane Howe, whose photograph is shown in this article, with a crash helmet on, a Lycra top, standing in front of a French bus. Anyway, she's on her epic annual charity ride to raise funds for Christian Aid, and she's currently tackling the Coals of Corsica, taking in 43 coals over 1,000 kilometres. It's her 20th ride, taking her alone across Europe with just two panniers and no backup. She'd been inspired to visit the Mediterranean island by the visit of the Tour de France last year. Before she left, she said, "I've heard Corsica is beautiful, wild and mountainous. I'll travel to and across France by train and take a boat from Nice to Ajaccio. I'll then attempt a recommended route of 1,000 kilometres before returning to Ajaccio. Wish me luck." You can sponsor Jane at www.justgiving.com/Jane Howe, that's H-O-U-G-H, 2014. www.justgiving.com/Jane Howe 2014. The third item, milepost back in its proper place. And there's a photograph of it, a milepost with 26 and 1 underneath it. Another fragment of Winchester heritage has been saved and returned to its rightful place. Last summer, Sustrans Ranger Eric Reed discovered a milepost from the Didcot, Newbury and Southampton Railway alongside the Itchen navigation path between Garnier Road and St Catherine's Lock, St Cross. He presumed it was disturbed by the contractors working on the new path. After some research, notably into whether there was a buried cable or gas pipe, it was finally planted last month. The team of Sustrans Rangers was Eric, John Griffiths, Bruce Kettle and Paul Hamilton. Bruce and Paul are also friends of Hockley Viaduct. The weather was wet, but in 2 hours the job was done. Some 40 kilograms of concrete and over 20 kilograms of rubble should hold it against falling or pushing. The post denotes 26 and a quarter miles from Newbury. In practical terms, it was placed near the path to be visible, but not too obtrusive, and where the team could actually dig. Friends of Hockley Viaduct supplied the concrete. God supplied the water. And finally, modern no match for medieval. Somehow, it is not quite the same. When the deanery book sale was launched by Tessa Till, the wife of the dean, to raise money for the girls' choir, part of the pleasure was to walk on medieval tiles in the deanery porch. Even when its success saw it spread inside, the books were displayed in an historic setting. But the arson attack 18 months ago put paid to the porch display. Combustible material so close to the main entrance to an ancient building was not considered a good idea. Now the book sale has relaunched in two German-style chalets, which are pictured. They just look like chalets.
And with that, we finish our regular features this week and we move on to what's on. Dirty Dancing is on at the Mayflower, Southampton, from Saturday the 28th of June. Performances from Monday to Thursday start at 7:30, and on Friday there are two performances, 5 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., with another two on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. I expect they need a rest after that. You can call the box office on 023 8071 1811. That's 023 8071 1811. There is an evening of French music performed by the Southampton Philharmonic Choir in Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 21st of June at 7:30 p.m. And the Pirates of Penzance will be performed in the open air at Langston House, Sparshot. Tickets are £18 per person, £10 per child, and £45 for a family ticket. You can bring your own picnic or buy a hamper there. And there is a restaurant on site if you prefer not to picnic. You can buy tickets by ringing 01962 77 6088. That's 01962 77 6088. Or email inquiries@langstonhouse.com. And finally, for what's on, the 2014 Winchester Festival of the Arts is running from Friday the 4th to Sunday the 13th of July. There are many exciting arts events taking place and tickets are available online at www.winchesterfestival.co.uk or by ringing 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. You can book events taking place at the Theatre Royal by ringing 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. And one more announcement for you, lighting up times. On Saturday the 14th, the lights go off at 4:50 a.m. and on again at 9:21 p.m. And on Wednesday the 18th, lights go out at 4:50 a.m. with lighting up time at 9:23 p.m. We fast approach the longest day of the year. Next, we can give you the general news items with the first article read for us by Ellen, please.
Viaducts part in D-Day landings. On the day that marked the 70th anniversary since the D-Day landings, it was only fitting that part of its history was commemorated in Winchester. Last Friday, two memorial plaques and a rail signal were officially unveiled on the Hockley Viaduct, which runs adjacent to the M3 across the Itchen Valley. It opened in October 1891 and linked Didcot, Newbury, Winchester and Southampton, playing a pivotal role in the transport of soldiers and equipment during both the First and Second World Wars. The memorials are the final piece of the jigsaw in the restoration of the site, which has been earmarked to be destroyed in the 1980s by the army but saved after public outcry. Friends of Hockley Viaduct, which was set up in 2007, campaigned for its restoration. Around 30 people, including both members of the public and veterans, and Winchester MP Steve Brine and explorer, author and broadcaster John Pilkington, attended the unveiling ceremony. And there are photographs of both the general public and some veterans. Chris Webb, however, who battled to preserve the viaduct for decades, was unable to attend due to illness. And after a speech from Councillor Robert Hutchinson, the last post sounded, and there was even an impromptu flypast. At the top of this article is a photograph of four smartly uniformed men, and you can see on the wall behind them one of the plaques. They are Brigadier Sandeep Inhanda, Commander Paul O'Neill, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Kaduk, and Lieutenant Commander Anthony Nagel. After a speech, I've said about the last post, I do beg your pardon, there's also the print of what it says on the memorial that you can see on the wall, and it says, "The original LSWR signal base is dedicated to the troops who crossed this viaduct to and from the vast military camp at Avington, home to United Kingdom, Australian, Bermudian, Canadian, Indian, Newfoundlander, Nova Scotian, Russian, Serbian and United States troops between 1914 and 1918. And it's donated by the Friends of Hockley Viaduct in 2014. Now, the troops, therefore, are commemorated in that memorial. And in the second memorial, it's dedicated to the railway men who oversaw the passage in the run-up to D-Day. And we've got a picture of that plaque with Maurice Holmes, ex-British Rail Director of Operations and Safety, and Kevin Robertson, author and railway historian, standing each side of it. And that plaque says, "This signal is dedicated to the railway men who oversaw the passage over the viaduct of 16,000 trains that ran in the 12 months leading up to D-Day, the 6th of June, 1944, donated by the Friends of Hockley Viaduct, June 2014.
And there's a photograph of Councillor Eileen Berry in her robes and official chain of the mayoralty of Winchester. She's outside the Abbey House. And it's headed, "Proud Eileen is the city's 815th mayor. And she hopes the year will be colourful, happy and full of joy. Councillor Eileen Berry has become Winchester's 815th mayor at the traditional annual ceremony held at the city's Guildhall. The Conservative member, she has served on the council for the past 11 years, formally received the chain of office from outgoing incumbent, Councillor Ernie Jeffs. Councillor Berry has long yearned for this role and announced to the packed Bapsey Hall, 'I accept with great pride my office as mayor. I promise you all that I'll do nothing but my best. I want my year to be colourful, happy and full of joy.' Banging her hand on the table to stress her words, she added, 'I'm here for you, and that's my pledge.' Bugler Colour Sergeant Mike Rimmer of the Waterloo Band and Bugles of the Rifles Regiment played Winchester's 12th century moot horn as the mayoral party processed past assembled guests and banks of councillors." Redundant word in there. Later, there was a musical interlude while Councillor Berry retired to change into her official robes of office, during which some of her favourite tunes were performed. These included Clair de Lune and the song I Dreamed a Dream from the musical Les Miserables, which was sung by her granddaughter, Amy Berry. Once the group had returned to the hall, Councillor Berry was handed her mayoral jewellery and a clunky cluster of keys to the city, which she jangled. The new mayor, who is a widow and declines to give her age, was born in Windsor, moving to Winchester when she was 16. A keen supporter of the arts, she has written poetry all her life, used to run Winchester's stage door fancy dress shop, and was a member of the St Cross Drama Group for 7 years. Her mayoral charities will be the National Armed Forces charity SSAFA, Winchester-based mental health charity Together, Blue Apple Theatre and the First Winchester Scouts. The historic office of Mayor of Winchester dates back to around 1200, when the city was first given permission during the reign of Richard the Lionheart to create the role. Until the 16th century, the mayor-elect was required to travel to Westminster to receive royal assent.
As Great War centenary commemorations sweep the nation, one school has found its own way to mark the milestone. And this article comes under the heading Trench Gives Pupils Soldiers' Perspective. Normal timetables were suspended at Stanmore Primary, Winchester, last week to learn about aspects of the conflict, and they even built their own trench. And there's a photograph that goes with this article, which shows the trench that they've built, surrounded by some three dozen pupils, some of them exhibiting the army spades that were used to dig the trench, and four of the teachers standing at the back of the group. History coordinator and Year 6 teacher Emma Pierce thinks it is important for younger generations to understand the significance of the war. "I believe the past informs the present, and it's vital there is awareness and respect of what has gone before us," she said. We've teamed up with the Hampshire Archives and talked through how we could access different aspects of the war for each year group. Year 6 pupils explored life in the trenches, and Corporal Kyle Yates of Winchester Army Training Regiment helped them build a defensive position within the grounds. The City Council donated the sandbags, and they used turf from the school site and dressed the scene with wartime artefacts. Emily Dellara, 11, was amongst those enthusiastically building the position. "Part of learning about the war is that we have to feel it. We learn the facts, but building this means we can properly know how the soldiers felt at the time." Naz Hamid, 11, added, "It gives you respect for them as well, because you can empathise with what they did." Children in years 1 and 2 investigated the role of animals and learned some rousing songs. Year 3 and 4 pupils designed propaganda posters urging young men to sign up and fight, as well as learning how to march like a new recruit. Year 5 visited the West Hill Cemetery to look at Great War graves, and using information on the headstones, they looked online to see what they could discover about each soldier.
Beaufort's big effort boosts Red Cross coffers. Here's another short article about a local school. A Winchester school has raised over £1,000 for the British Red Cross. Henry Beaufort students held a series of fundraisers led by Isaac Crawford, aged 16, and raised £1,331 for the charity. A cheque was presented during Red Cross Week to charity representative Jan Treacher Evans, who said, "This is an amazing amount that you have raised. You should all be very proud of yourselves. The Red Cross relies on donations such as these to pay for vital services in Hampshire. It'll also look very good on your CVs." Events included a wheelchair race, penalty shootout and crossbar challenge, cake sale, handmade bracelet sale, and a mufti day.
A large marquee with lots of red balloons arising from the tables of the guests sitting there, something like over 100 of them. It's 40 years on, and pigs go back to where it began. Not they, it, because it was a succulent hog roast. What else? The main course, when the pigs, more properly known as the Alsford Pigs Association, celebrated their 40th anniversary on Saturday. The charity, whose motto is "Local People Helping Local People," was founded in the Ship Inn, Bishop Sutton, back in 1974, so it was appropriate that a marquee in the village should be the scene for their big birthday bash. It was attended by well over 100 members and wives, past and present, with the food followed by honorary Life Vice President Peter Harwood, one of a number of originals present, entertaining the guests with some revealing stories from the past. Current chairman Phil Withington Smith thanked the members for coming together with a common purpose and willingness through combined effort to raise money to put to good use in the community. And there they all were sitting enjoying their hog roast.
Rob named leader of City Council. Rob Humby has been officially confirmed as the new leader of Winchester City Council at a full council meeting at the Guildhall. Mr. Humby, who represents the Aylesbury, Durley, Curdridge and Upham ward for the Conservative Party, has been a councillor for 7 years and leader of the Conservative group since March. Previously deputy leader, he replaced Keith Wood, who retired last month. Two new faces have joined the new cabinet announced last Thursday. Ian Tait returns to again hold the housing portfolio, and Mike Southgate now holds the new brief for communities and transport. They replace Keith Wood and Tony Coates, who both stood down at the elections last month. Councillor Vicky Weston is the new deputy. The seven-strong cabinet and its members' portfolios are Councillor Rob Humby, leader, corporate policy, economy and arts, tourism, corporate communications, special projects. Councillor Vicky Weston, built environment and deputy leader, development management, strategic planning, building control, historic environment. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, finance and organisational development, financial services, revenues and benefits, IMT, organisational development. Councillor Ian Tait, housing services. Councillor Jan Warwick, environment, health and wellbeing, environmental health and licensing, environment contract, landscape and open spaces, street care, health and wellbeing, sport and physical activity. Councillor Steve Miller, business services, legal and democratic services, estates, business management, major projects, new homes, delivery. Councillor Mike Southgate, communities and transport, community grants, community safety and neighbourhood services, traffic, transport and engineering, parking, museums. And there's a photograph of the seven. Leader Rod Humby sitting, the rest of the City Council's cabinet standing behind him and sitting next to him.
Bishop's Waltham Carnival and Show. This article has many brightly coloured photographs. There's the South Sea Batala Band. Not only the people in lovely bright clothes, but their drums as well have got drapes that are brightly coloured. There's Bishop's Waltham Infant School pupils on parade, and both boys and girls among this crowd I can see dressed as Superman, among many other different costumes. Roynan Dance and Swanmore is another group of children in beautiful, brightly dressed clothes. There's a stilt walker and a fire engine and classic and vintage cars, all taking part in this parade. Sun and Games follows the thunder. After the booming thunderstorm of the morning, the sunshine beaming across the high street was just the start of a day promising fun and laughter. Thousands lined the streets of Bishop's Waltham last Saturday for the 20th annual Carnival and Show, organised by Bishop's Waltham Rotary, celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. South Sea Batala Band kicked off the procession in the square, and then it went up Ho Road to the sports ground. Rotary President Colin Carter said the event is important for community spirit. It's becoming harder to put these events on, but if you don't do it, you don't get the people out. It brings people together. The procession was loud, proud and colourful as it made its way down the bunting-topped high street. And the theme of all those fancy dress costumes? Heroes and villains.
Call for a fair share in climate change fight. WNAC meeting hears that leadership is needed, and WNAC is the Winchester Action on Climate Change. A meeting on the challenge of tackling climate change in the district called for councils and MPs to take a lead on the issue. 80 people crammed into St Lawrence's Parish Room in Winchester last Saturday to debate the best way for the Winchester district to do its fair share to meet climate change targets. It's not whether we do something about climate change, it's what we do, said Chris Holloway, director of WNAC. She introduced speakers on the national and European targets for greenhouse gas and renewable energy and their implications for the district locally. I'm not a regular WNAC person, said a woman from the audience. We need leadership from councillors and MPs to take things forward. I'd be proud to be part of a Winchester district which decided to act and take the lead. Another member of the audience said, I think the answer lies in assessing the science and technology and having the courage to react to the facts across party boundaries and take action. Winchester MP Steve Brind, who chaired the meeting, introduced Bob Barnes of WNAC's panel of scientific experts. Mr Barnes set out WNAC's proposals for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. He said the Winchester district produces around 1 million tonnes of greenhouse gas a year. This needed to be cut by 25,000 tonnes of CO2 a year from 2016 to 2020, he told the audience. He said, this is a cut of 200 kilos a year for everybody in Winchester District, man, woman and child. This can be done, and it means driving the car 600 miles less, or cutting out one short return flight to Europe, e.g. Brussels. Mr Barnes suggested a target for better home insulation, building a new leisure centre that could cut emissions by 80%, and for a proposed shared efficient district heating system for the hospital, prison and university. Richard Ritchie, chair of WNAC's Renewable Energy Group, said the area needed to get more of its energy from new renewable sources instead of fossil fuels like oil, gas and coal. A shift to heating using sustainably managed wood instead of gas and oil could play a big role, as could solar, he said. We could easily generate more renewable energy locally. We have worked out how we could do it using different renewable sources of energy, all based on identified resources and known technologies, Mr. Ritchie added. The economic benefits were emphasised by other speakers, including Councillor Rob Humby, the newly appointed leader of Winchester City Council, who spoke of additional jobs in making homes more energy efficient and in renewable energy schemes. Councillor Jan Warwick, who holds the portfolio for the environment on the City Council, set out the steps that the council has already taken to save energy in the Guildhall and in council homes. The council has surveyed all its housing stock and identified where it needs to top up the insulation, install more efficient heating, and which homes are suitable for solar panels. For more information about the Winchester Action on Climate Change, log on to winac.org.uk/our share, or one word.
It's official. Eastleigh is top club in the country. Eastleigh Rugby Football Club is officially the top club in the country after being crowned Pride of the Nation. The club stormed to the top of the NatWest Rugby Forces Pride of the Region online competition before going on to be declared the best in the land. The prestigious award comes on the back of East's steady progression over the last decade, working their way up the leagues and finishing off last season by claiming the Gales HSB Hampshire Bowl. But delighted officials say it is the work carried out in every section of the Bishopstoke Road Club that has led to the well-deserved accolade. Outgoing captain Russell Smith said, "This is a perfect end to a perfect season and a perfect start to another one. A lot of hard work has gone into this club, and this award makes us feel just special. If winning this does not put us on the map, then nothing will. It could be the start of something good for Eastleigh." Eastleigh had already won themselves a visit from an England player after collecting the most votes in regional section of the competition, and will also receive a personalised pitch kit to go with it. The club plans to thank their loyal supporters with an out-of-season weekend of fun on June 20th, 21st, when the NatWest-backed Rugby Force programme provides an opportunity to welcome volunteers, members and businesses to their headquarters. Hundreds of clubs across the country will be doing the same as they spend a weekend of DIY on clubhouses and staging social functions over the 2 days. Newly installed Eastleigh president, former player Nick Mukey, I hope I have his name right because there's a photograph of him when he was in action and I don't want to cross him. And he said that the club has come on in leaps and bounds and I'm privileged to be elected at such a good time. It's all looking good for Eastleigh, especially winning this award and with the World Cup coming up too. The youth we have got coming through is all good and the future as well. The weekend will be a good way of repaying sponsors and saying thank you to the people who voted for us and to some other local clubs who I know also voted for us.
Firm gives a lift to Children's Hospice. Naomi House Deputy Chief Executive Mark Smith is pictured with Trevor Fryer, local sales representative at Toyota Material Handling UK, and behind them you can see some sort of machine. A children's hospice has received a generous donation from a UK car manufacturer. Naomi House and Jack's Place near Sutton Scotney have been given a truck by Toyota Material Handling UK to help them provide essential services to the children they care for. Recently, the charity moved to a larger warehouse to allow for more stock to be held. However, the move has put pressure on the amount of manual handling carried out largely by the charity's volunteers. It is hoped the BT Staxio-powered stacker will reduce the need to lift and carry the equipment by hand. Mark Smith, Deputy Chief Executive at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We are delighted to take delivery of a truck donated by Toyota to help improve safety and efficiency in our increasingly busy warehouse. Rapid expansion of our network of shops has boosted our efforts to make money. However, with more shops in need of stock and more goods being donated, Toyota's generous gift could not have come at a better time. We are extremely grateful to them for the support shown to Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices." Trevor Fryer, local sales representative, said, "I first met the charity to advise which warehouse equipment would best suit their operation and provided a quote. However, I soon became aware of the hard work and dedication from all the team at the Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices and wanted to help with their fundraising activities. At Toyota, we are aware of the difference that efficient material handling equipment can make to a warehouse operation, and we wanted to make sure that the hospice's warehouse operation was the most cost-saving, time-saving and safest it could be."
Winchester Primary School Swimming Gala, and there is a photograph, a wide-angle photograph of the pool at River Park Leisure Centre, taken from one end, so you get the full effect of this, of the expanse of water, frightening, and the lane lines made out, and there's a gallery on one side with all the spectators up there, and on the other side, lots more spectators, and of course children wandering about, but presumably they are called on when their race comes. This is pupils from 26 schools, 340 children from 25 different schools, and they all descended on River Park Leisure Centre last Friday, making a splash with the 14th annual Primary School Swimming Gala. It was attended by, among others, the new mayor, Councillor Eileen Berry, as well as hundreds of parents watching from the sidelines. It was hosted by Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club and sponsored by the University of Winchester, Balthaup, Winchester Roundtable and Sainsbury's Badger Farm and City Centre branches. Alison Compton of the Penguins said, "It gives lots of children an opportunity to swim competitively, and it is their first experience of that in a fun environment. It's a really popular community event that all the schools love coming." Harry Day of Prince's Mead came first in the Year 4 boys' race, with Christopher Davis of St Bede in second and Sherborne House's Jamie Hickman in third. Alicia Peinado of Hairstock Primary came first in the Year 4 girls' race, and Olivia Busher and Eleanor Jones, both of St Swithin's, came in second and third. Pilgrims came first in boys' freestyle relays, with Bishops Waltham in second and Twyford Prep in third. St Swithin's Junior scooped first in the girls' freestyle relays, with Bishops Waltham taking second and Prince's Mead third. Pilgrims was victorious in the boys' mixed stroke relays. In second was Bishops Waltham and third, Otterbourne. In the girls' mixed stroke relays, Bishops Waltham took home the trophy, with St Swithin's Junior in second and Twyford Prep coming third. Compton won the boys' invitational relay, South Wanston came second and Scantabout third. The girls' invitational relay saw All Saints finish first, Otterbourne take second and St Peter's third. And as well as the photograph I described earlier, there's what I imagine to be, well, it's certainly a team, it may be the relay team, 10 or so girls and boys in matching T-shirts over their swim trunks. And then another lad who's just waist deep, having arisen from the water, obviously, with his red cap on. And it says, the red cap says Prince's Mead. And so we know he did well. And he's got his swim goggles on. And another very good action photograph of someone doing the crawl, taking a breath as they take one arm, their right arm, over to make the next stroke. Very active. You could almost hear the noise in the swimming gala that's normally a feature of swimming galas in enclosed spaces.
And now some news in brief about help for flood-hit homes and businesses. Nearly 120 flood-hit families and businesses in the Winchester district have received financial help so far. In announcing the figure at last week's Cabinet meeting, Councillor Rob Humby, leader of the City Council, said, "There are strict criteria for this flood support, and I would like to thank officers and councillors for helping householders and businesses to navigate their way through the process and receive the help they need." Civic chiefs have held flood clinics in the worst affected areas, liaised with parish councils, the Winchester District Citizens Advice Bureau and government offices, and held one-to-one visits at homes and businesses. Support has included relief on council tax and business rates, as well as business support grants and repair and renew grants.
There's a photograph here of Alsford Music Festival. Lots of people happily sitting on the grass having picnics, I think. The four people in the front are wearing sunglasses and bright yellow sun hats. Two of them have their feet bare, and one of them is wearing that traditional gear for going to a music festival, Wellington boots. threatened washout turns into a sellout. It was a sellout, and promised to whet the musical appetites of the young and old of Hampshire. On a day that looked set for torrential rain and thunderstorms, it could easily have been a washout. But instead, the Alsford Music Festival at Albury Park saw over 2,000 people gather for a taste of what the county's musical talent and beyond can deliver. Featuring artists such as the Earthlights Boogie Band, Bombs, Tori Reid and the Hattie Jakes Playlist, the area was full of picnicking friends and families basking in the weekend sunshine. There were areas specifically designed to entertain children, with dance workshops, football skills from Alsford Town Youth, and even something called zorbing. I don't know what that is. The festival last Saturday boasted four stages, including an indoor acoustic arena and stalls from local businesses. Last year's event raised £10,000 for local charities, and one of the organisers, Tim Miller, said they are hoping to beat that target. The idea is to appeal to people of ages and demographics. That surely should mean of all ages and demographics. We had folk singers, indie bands, and then later on in the day, party bands. It costs £30,000 to put on by the time we've paid for everything, but any profit we make is then donated to charity. We sold 2,000 tickets in advance and 200 camping tickets.
I'll stick with the sport because Fenwick gets a new season off to a flyer. And this is a young lady who's a former Peter Simmons student, Laura Fenwick. And she's pictured striding along. We go from the primary schools to university. She opened her campaign in the 2014 British Triathlon Junior Super Series with a brilliant fifth place finish in the National Aquathon Championships, held as part of the ITU World Series event in London's Hyde Park. The aquathon was held over the sprint distance with a 750-metre swim in the Serpentine, followed by a 5-kilometre run within the park, finishing in front of a packed grandstand just an hour before the men's and women's elite World Series races. Fenwick had a solid swim, leaving the water in around ninth place, but moved strongly through the field on each of the three run laps to take her into fifth place by the finish. Fenwick now studies at Oxford University, where last week she became one of 10 undergraduate recipients of a BNY Mellon Sports Award. She had previously shown good early season form, when finishing 27th in the British University Triathlon Championships and second in the annual Oxford versus Cambridge varsity match, where on both occasions she was the leading Oxford lady. These two performances have also put her in line for a prestigious Oxford Half Blue, a tremendous achievement in her first year at the university. And the Hyde Park race saw the Winchester and District Athletics Club member maintain this excellent run of form. Unfortunately, university exams mean Fenwick will have to miss the next round of the Super Series, but she will be back for the National Elite Triathlon Championships at Liverpool in mid-August and the European Junior Cup at Nottingham later the same month.
And thank you, everyone, for those items. A reminder again that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 870 370. Again, thanks to our editors, Bill and Irene. Also to our hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you also to our readers, Ellen.
Bye-bye.
Graham.
Goodbye.
And Albie.
Bye.
And also from me, Maria. Goodbye. And please remember to put the memory stick in your wallet when you have finished and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.